Well, this is BBC Radio 4, where now the comedian and writer Richard Herring presents the fourth programme in his series where he investigates bad habits that affect us in the workplace. Today, he's looking at perfectionism.
Anyone who has ever been privileged to direct a film also knows that although it can be like trying to write War and Peace in a bumper car in an amusement park, when you finally get it right, there are not many joys in life that can equal the feeling.
The voice of Stanley Kubrick, one of the greatest filmmakers of the 20th century. He was such a perfectionist, he took years over every film. Imagine how bad Eyes Wide Shut would have been if he'd just dashed it off. Doesn't bear thinking about. So although striving for perfection might seem like a good work habit, you can actually overcook a project by working on it too intensively. And whilst perfectionism often generates genius, working for a perfectionist can be torturous, as my minions at Radio 4 know only too well. But we need to do this again. The microphone is the wrong colour. I can't work with you people. But what part does perfectionism play in the regular workplace outside of Hollywood? To find out, I met a man with the most Hollywood-sounding name imaginable.
My name's Kerry Cooper. I'm Professor of Organizational Psychology and Health at Lancaster University. That's a mouthful.
He needs a perfectionist to edit that job title down for him. I'll get on it.
Perfectionism, I think, comes in lots of different forms in the workplace, but it is a person who constantly revising reports, plans, to improve it by just a small iteration each time. It is about somebody who also is trying to maintain control over all the details of a particular project or work stream or something. It's somebody who's kind of not happy with anything that others do if they're not done his or her way.
So what is the scale of the problem of perfectionism? Is it a very common thing?
I'd suspect, just at a rough guess, you get 1 in 10 people in a kind of managerial role.
Yeah.
In whatever walk of life, who are real perfectionists, who are real kind of control freaks. Particularly now, we might see a bit more of it because in many workplaces now, of course, jobs are insecure.
Yeah.
People are much more sensitive to what's going on. They don't want to take as many risks. They want everybody to do the job perfectly so that there's no fallout from anything that they do. So it's not so much perfection as covering your backside.
So, what kind of working environment requires such a level of perfectionism? A double Michelin-starred kitchen, perhaps? Marcus Waring is a man who takes as much time over his tiramisu as Kubrick did over his cinematography. I don't know if you've ever eaten 12-year-old tiramisu. It's disgusting. His restaurant, coincidentally named Marcus Waring at the Barclay, opened recently in London's swanky Knightsbridge.
You're pushing it so hard and you're so determined to get to the top that it becomes an obsession. And being obsessed with it becomes your life and you become it. I am obsessed. I live, breathe and sleep it. You know, you wake up in the morning, it's the first thing that comes to your mind is hitting a level of perfection. It just doesn't end. It's almost like an illness, I suppose, in a way. You just can't get rid of it.
So is perfectionism an incurable disease that sufferers and the people around them just have to learn to live with? And is perfect food really attainable? Maybe not. But Marcus is still trying like some kind of culinary Sisyphus. But what are the people who work with him? Can you be a perfectionist and a team player? After all, there is no I in team. But there is a me in there. Here's a man who knows what it's like working with a perfectionist.
Hello, my name's Alan Williams. I'm head chef at Marcus Waring at the Barclay Hotel. I've worked with Marcus now for just over 6 years.
He's very much been on the end of my tongue many, many times. Oh, he's been at the rough end by a long shot.
Alan remembers what Marcus was like in the early days, when, if anything, he was even more driven.
I remember looking at him and just thinking, my God, he was so focused. And I just remember being almost in awe of his goal and his quest for that achievement. I think what he's done is learnt to pass down the responsibility more. Whereas in the early days, he was the sharp end of the kitchen on his own completely. He wrote the menus, he designed the recipes, and he saw everything through on his own. Over the years, he's learnt that it could become quite destructive.
Leading a team takes diplomacy, trust, and delegation. Carrie Cooper says that the success of a perfectionist depends in some cases on the size of the team they're leading.
I think in small teams, you know, perfectionists work better because what they can do is they can inspire. If they have that quality, remember, a perfectionist is not necessarily negative. If they have good interpersonal skills, good social skills, they're inspirational as long as they don't let that overtake everything. But it depends on the people around them. If they're inspired, if a perfectionist manages people well and engages them and gets them involved in it, then people are prepared to go a certain distance along the perfectionist route.
But can the drive, ambition, and determination required in the pursuit of perfection set you apart from your more feckless and less fussy contemporaries and turn you into a bit of a loner? Marcus seems to think so.
I was very much an individualist as a young person. Boxing was my sport. It's an individual sport. I was never a team player. I never hung out with people. I never went and did social things with school. I went to work and I went to a boxing ring. That was it. And I was very much a loner. The hardest part of my life is becoming a team player. It was a very hard thing for me to become a team player. Very difficult.
James's job at the restaurant is to advise customers about which wine they should drink. Whatever James does, Marcus is watching him like a hawk.
Marcus always liked to stand at the back of the restaurant sometimes, just having a little peek at what we're doing, just making sure we're doing things right. And when one of us was decanting, one of my colleagues, it's just the way he was decanting the white wine, it almost looked a little bit too showy. The bottle was a long way from the actual decanter, so it was a long stream of wine, which first of all can allow for a mistake. Also, it just looks a little bit too garish in a way. He let me know that he saw it, and we quickly dealt with, don't do it again, and he won't do it again.
The way I look at it is that I try and prevent the mistakes from happening. And that's just myself, my head chef and sous chefs walking around with their eyes open, watching people work, analysing how they're reacting to what they're doing, body language, the way they talk, and just stopping them, blocking them and guiding them through their day-to-day working lives. The control in a kitchen at this level is obsessive.
You have to be obsessive. You have to be compulsive. So is perfectionism actually a mental disorder or a necessity in such a demanding environment? Head chef Alan is convinced that without this pursuit of gastronomic utopia, Marcus and he wouldn't be where they are today.
That drive towards what he wanted was essential. I don't think we would have been where we are today unless he had had that and instilled it in the people around him. He gave us the same feeling of passion that he had. It set us all on our own way, I think, and it helped us focus on what we were doing.
I wasn't going to call it, but I am going to call it aggression, because it almost comes out of you in aggression. You just automatically just snap into something because you've seen something you don't like and you just flip. People often say there's something quite mad about a chef, that one minute you can be nice and the next minute you can just absolutely go crazy. And it's a very simple word for that. It's called passion, and it's uncontrollable.
Good morning, Imagination. Are you interested in the gallery space? I'll just put you through. One moment, please.
As you walk in through the front door, you move into this simple white space. You usually see when you come in here, as everything's white, is that there's somebody usually fairly fastidiously cleaning. We tend to have a fairly obsessional regime in how clean the place is. I think the Queen thinks that the whole world smells of fresh paint. It's a little bit like us here. You usually come in and find that something's just been touched up or repainted.
Perhaps a perfectionist can lead a small team of worshipping, cultish converts. But what if you're head of a huge global conglomerate? Douglas Broadley is CEO and creative director of Imagination. They're a design agency whose clients include Ford, Visa and the Sports Personality of the Year show. He's well known for his exacting standards, but does he admit to being a perfectionist?
Yeah, in some ways I would call myself a perfectionist. I think perfection is an aspect of your character that is relentless, unforgiving in some way. I think that perfection really does rest in the smallest things, the almost imperceptible things. Here there could be 15, 20 different disciplines, 70, 80 people working on a project. That can be very frustrating at times. But I think like a great orchestral conductor who knows how to bring together the different elements that make up something extraordinary, that's really what you try and do.
My name's Kevin Palmer. I used to work with Douglas at Imagination. My role at Imagination, I was there for 10 years, and I was the creative director within the digital communications department. Yeah, he is a bit of a perfectionist, really. And although it used to absolutely kill me when he would turn up at 5 o'clock on a Friday and change everything, which meant phone calls to the wife to tell her that, yeah, once again, I'm not going to be here this weekend. I'm going to be in work. It was all for good reason. We used to call it being dugged.
Here's occupational psychologist Oliver James, who reckons that perfectionists like Douglas are in good company.
There are very many, many senior chief executives who are perfectionists and have managed to get the whole thing under control and have managed to conceal it a bit. But basically, they are massive control freaks.
I'm sure I drive people absolutely mad some days, but I honestly think that the details matter. It really does matter how somebody answers the telephone. It really does matter how clean the floor is. Maybe this moves into the realm of obsessive compulsive, but I'm a terrible cup tidier, you know, so if we leave a meeting, I get absolutely furious if everybody walks out without tidying the place. Cleanliness, marks on walls, you know, pin tacks that haven't been taken out or things that have fallen over. I don't like the furniture when it gets all a bit messed up. I'm probably the person who goes back and twitches the chairs back around the table. So those sort of things.
It's nice that the boss isn't too la-di-da to tidy up after himself and everyone else. But Oliver James argues that this kind of management can have its dark side.
Working for perfectionist bosses is very, very unpleasant. They are constantly trying to deal with self-critical feelings in themselves by passing that problem over to you.
If I'm being intercut against some psychologist who's talking of the terror that people live in, living under the regime of a perfectionist, I just don't think that that's true here. I think that there are probably enough perfectionists within our company for there to be a critical mass. Maybe the lunatics have taken over the asylum, but there are enough of them for people to understand that second best isn't good enough.
In this case, the perfectionism at the top filters through to the rest of the team. And even if he doesn't like being dugged, Kevin admires his boss.
I have a lot of respect for Douglas. He's a brilliant visionary, and his perfectionism was such an impact because when you're working in that environment, I also am a bit of a perfectionist myself, not to the same levels, I don't think, but in terms of getting things right, a lot of it would be my own doing, keeping myself there late at night and on weekends to make sure it was right. And it has to be said, a lot of it would be Doug's doing as well. And so it did impact on my life. I mean, I've got two kids, but thankfully I've got a very sympathetic wife and she understood.
I'm sure that behind all of this is an absolute intense driven sense of fear of failure. I don't think you give yourself the opportunity to think about that. Why would you want to think about that?
Douglas Broadley, Chief Executive of Imagination. If you're listening to this, stabbing your biro into your hand in frustration at your own boss's relentless demands for perfect work, then firstly, put the pen down, you'll get ink poisoning. And secondly, relax. Carrie Cooper might be able to tell us how to cope with the overbearing perfectionist.
I think there are a number of ways of dealing with a kind of perfectionist in the workplace, particularly a boss who's a perfectionist. I mean, I think one way is finding the right time and place to give the perfectionist feedback on what impact their behavior is having on you, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's important. That's one way you can deal with a
sure.
boss. Another way, of course, is to find another job. Because seriously, there are people who you sometimes work with who just don't listen to you.
So, while striving to do your best shouldn't be frowned upon, and indeed some jobs require attention to detail, it is important not to drive yourself bonkers trying to reach impossible goals. To be a good employer, you need to delegate and trust that you've employed people who'll do the job correctly. And there has to come a point with anything you're working on when you say, forget this, that's good enough, and get on with your life. I'm sure I could come up with a slightly more succinct and satisfying conclusion, but forget this, that's good enough. Have a lovely day.
Bad Habits was presented by Richard Herring and produced by Lucy Greenwell. The series is a unique production for BBC Radio 4.